Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, coming to you from Studio E on the second floor with a special guest to talk all about IoT. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. Tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Jordan Ree. I'm a developer on the IoT drivers team. So we work on driver support for Raspberry Pi as well as APIs that let you access the full capabilities of the hardware.
So you actually write the low-level stuff that allows us to interact with the tiny little pins on all these devices.
Exactly. We write the drivers, and then we also do API work to expose that in ways that are useful to applications.
So tell me a little bit about what kind of things you can do with these low-level drivers. I mean, what is it that we're actually accessing and exposing into our programs?
So today we're going to be showing you a new feature of the GPIO APIs, and we've added the ability to detect changes in pin changes in a much more precise way. So now we will grab a timestamp of when the pin change state in kernel mode is close as possible to the actual change, which then lets you difference those times in user mode to give you precise intervals between when those events occurred.
So are we talking like actual pulses that are coming in like the pins of these little devices right here?
That's right. So if your pin is changing state like this, we now let you measure the time between changes much more accurately.
I see. And so this is like the lowest level of the thing, right? And so if you're talking about like a temperature sensor, it's generally sending you some kind of electrical signal.
That's right.
Okay.
So there's a particular sensor we've seen people trying to use, the DHT11, the DHT22. It uses a single wire to communicate, and it encodes its data as pulse widths. So if you can't measure the time between pulse widths, you can't tell what data it's trying to send back.
Oh, I see. And so previously, tell us about how we used to work with these. Did these not work at all, but they do now?
They sort of worked. So what people would do is they would just read the state of the pin in a loop. So in their program, they would have a busy loop that would read the state of the pin. They'd say, okay, is it high, is it high, is it high, is it high? The pin would go high, and then they say, okay, take a timestamp. But that's inherently inaccurate because the pin could change state and you might not figure it out until sometime
Because it's
later.
Not in the width of the loop.
Yeah.
Because you might have some dispatcher timer also, and if it's at 100 milliseconds, you might measure the width wrong and lose information.
Right, okay. So there's a couple of problems with that. Trying to do that in user mode, your code can be preempted at any time, so you can be scheduled out and miss the transition.
Right.
And it also uses 100% CPU, so you're spinning the whole time running code, whereas with this new approach, it's interrupt-driven, meaning the system can go into a relatively low power state until the pin changes state. Then it just captures the time and goes back into that low power state.
So I feel like I want to see what this looks like and how it actually works. Because the interesting thing that I'm seeing is that because I always had, like I used the Fez hat once and I had to have this dispatcher timer that called at a specific interval. Uh-huh. And you're saying there's some sensors that need a specific width of the signal.
Yes.
And that's never not going to work all the way.
Yes, and we're talking about very short time spans here on the order of 30 microseconds to 120 microseconds. Wow. So these are very tall, small time spans.
Awesome. Well, let's see what you got.
Sure.
All right, so what are we looking at right here, Jordan?
We are looking at the previous GPIO one-wire sample, which used the polling technique, calling read in an infinite loop to wait for a pin to change state.
Is that where that for loop with all the semicolons is?
Exactly. So here we have a for loop. We are reading the state of the pin. We're checking if the pin changed from the last time we read it. And if it changed in the right direction, we move on. And we have a timestamp of when that occurred.
I see. So this loop is always going, and you're always at the mercy of user mode speed. Or you might get called out, for example, and then you're not going to be able to know the difference.
That's correct.
Okay.
So a large number of samples, so maybe out of 10 times you try to do this, it would succeed seven or eight
Which
times.
Which is not good.
Yeah.
All right, so what does the new code look like?
The new code looks like this. So what we're doing is we are creating a GPIO change reader, which is like a buffer that will store change events.
I see.
And it fills up with an event, a timestamp each time.
Is it like a reactive kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what we do is we say wait for items async, and this will wait for the change reader to fill up with some specified number of changes. So we say, okay, start recording, start listening for changes, and after you've received 43 changes, then continue. So we're using a wait. Uh-huh. Now this is C++ code, so it looks a little bit different, but in C# code, this would be a wait for items async, and your program would essentially be suspended. It would be in a sleeping state while it's waiting for all these changes to come in, and then as soon as they're all there, you wake up and then you process them. So once we have them, we go through, for each change, we go through and we difference the time between each change and we figure out whether each pulse was a 0 or a 1.
I see, and this is gonna give you an exact measurement of how long that pulse was at a high or a low state.
Right.
Okay, so my question that I have a couple of questions, hope you can help me with them. Why is the number 43 just an arbitrary number you chose, or is it dependent on the sensor?
This is dependent on the sensor. Got so it. This is just part of the protocol for this particular device.
I see. So this device has 44 timestamps, so to speak, and you're measuring the ups and downs in there, and that's going to be the message.
Right.
Okay, that's awesome. The other question I have is that if this, like you said, this is something that's also available in C#.
Yes.
Okay, so this C# thing would just be an async call to get me 43 of them, and then you just measure all the distances between them, and then you have this output.
Right.
The last question I have, and it just popped out of my head, but it was a super important one. Well, let's keep going, and I'll ask it as it comes
in, right?
Because there was one more question that I had that I'm forgetting. So tell me a little bit about, here's the question. So this is all happening at the kernel level.
Yes, okay. So timestamps, when a pin changes state, it causes an interrupt to run, which runs purely in kernel mode.
Sure.
And in there, we have a very small amount of code that just captures a timestamp, queries the performance counter, stores that into the buffer, which is efficiently shared between user and kernel mode.
Sure.
And then the ISR returns, and the system continues doing whatever it was doing. So there's logic to detect there when 43 or when whatever number of events you want have occurred. And then we do the signaling to user mode to wake up. And then you can go and retrieve those items from the buffer, again, in a very efficient way.
And that's really cool because, I mean, if people don't know, like when you type into a keyboard, it issues an interrupt at the OS level.
Exactly.
And every active program can receive that message at any time. And you're saying that now with this kind of call, you're able to use GPIO pins as if they were a keyboard, for example, and any program can use that input.
Right. So we've supported the ability to detect interrupts, and you can very easily attach an event handler in C# that runs when a pin changes state. And that all works great, but what we didn't provide was a timestamp, a way to accurately measure when it occurred. So this gives you the ability to measure when these events occur relative to each other very accurately.
Awesome. And so you're running this code now over here, is that right?
That's right. So right now I have it set up the old way. So I added the new way to the sample and let you choose between the different techniques. Mm-hmm. So this is using polling. So it's sitting in that infinite loop.
It's that loop that we were looking at.
Sitting in the infinite loop, reading the state of the pin, waiting for it to change. And it's about an 83% success rate.
Which is kind of crappy. I mean, if you're thinking about it, this thing is right there. You might as well be getting the right reading for it because you're literally on board, right?
Right.
Okay.
So now I'm going to switch it over to use.
So how do you know that it's failing? That's my question.
As part of the protocol, it sends a checksum. So there's a couple ways it can fail. One, you might not receive all 43 pulses because maybe you missed one. Maybe your program got scheduled out. The other way is maybe you misread the
timing.
Yeah, the timing. Maybe you thought a 1 was a 0 and a 0 was a 1. But then there's a checksum. So if the message doesn't all hash to the correct checksum, then you know
something
the reading
wrong.
Is invalid.
All right, so let's go to the interrupt version, and you're saying that this one, I'm gonna go ahead and click it.
Sure.
You're saying that this one should always just work.
Maybe not always, but it does work a higher percentage of the time.
Got
Again,
it.
In kernel mode, you can be preempted by other ISRs. And another benefit of this is it uses way less CPU. So this registers like 0% CPU usage, whereas the other technique just pegs a core at like 25% of total CPU.
I see. So right away, we're already at better success rate than we were. I mean, obviously it goes down and it goes up because the numbers are really small, but in expectation, you're gonna expect this to be a lot higher than before, number one. But even if it was exactly the same, you're saying that there would be no CPU usage because it's all happening at the OS interrupt level.
It's so small that it's indetectable.
I see. So now you can be running a lot more stuff on the tiny device with this interrupt driven. So is this for all GPIO pins? Is this an API that you call?
Yes. How do you use that? So we've added a new API called GPIO Change Reader to the windows.devices.gpio namespace.
Okay.
And you will new up one of these. You say new GPIO change reader, and you'll pass in the pin that you want it to listen to.
And then it's just an event handler that you get back, or is it the async call that you mentioned?
So then you get your, you have your GPIO change reader object. So here we're creating this GPIO change reader, ref new GPIO change reader. And when we sample it, we're first going to clear it, just clear out anything that might be in it, and then we're going to say start. So that's like turning, that's like pressing record on your camcorder. Then it's going to start listening and recording all the changes that happen. And then we're going to say wait for items async, wait for it to fill up with 43 items. And then once it does fill up with that number of items, the async call will continue, and then you can process those.
That's awesome. Okay, so for those that are wanting to actually look at this and do this, where can they go to get more information?
So we have a sample available on GitHub. So if you go to the MSIoT/samples GitHub and go to the GPIO OneWire sample, you will find this sample there as well as a schematic. And the API is also documented on MSDN as GPIO change reader in the windows.devices.gpio namespace.
Awesome. So if people are really interested in getting precision level interrupts using GPIO, they should look at this right away.
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been awesome. Jordan, thanks so much for spending some time with us. We've been learning all about how to use interrupts instead of tight loops that take up too much CPU for doing Windows IoT core type applications. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Barrs. This is Channel 9, and we are in Studio E with Windows IoT folks. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time.